Coming up on Golf Today, world number one Scottie Scheffler ready for his title defense at the Hero. Is there any chance that his 2025 looks like his historic 2024? The Scotsman Robert McIntyre checks in from Albany as well, talking his place in the game, and we'll ask him about the Ryder Cup, play for pay or for pride. And the U.S. Ryder Cup team manager John Wood will join the show. What if Tiger and Ryder Cup payments, a distraction or a big nothing? Find out next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
This week, the Hero World Challenge returns to Albany, Bahamas for the ninth consecutive time. 15-time major champion Tiger Woods plays tournament host of the event, featuring an all-star field of 20 of the game's biggest stars.
I think I saw Ryan Lavner's yacht. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside the aforementioned senior writer of Golf Channel. I'll tell you what, it was a year ago, Scottie Scheffler kind of launching into 2024 with a win at the Hero. Bogey-free final round, beat Sepp Straka by three.
Wasn't just last year. He was also runner-up the two previous years. And when you look at Scottie Scheffler in his totality, very likely PGA Tour Player of the Year for the third consecutive year. And look, Damon, I've kind of missed Scottie Scheffler.
Have you?
I've missed seeing him play over the past 2 months. We haven't seen him competitively since the President's Cup. This was the whole point, right, of this calendar year switch for the PGA Tour schedule. Give guys a break like Scottie Scheffler if they want to do so. And look, it's been a launching pad in the past. Why not this year for even bigger things for Scottie Scheffler in 2025?
You won't have to wait much longer, Scottie Scheffler. The world number one headlines the field at this week's unofficial PGA Tour event in 2025. Scottie Scheffler, of course, closed out his year in 2023 in style, winning Tiger's event after finishing runner-up to Victor Hovland, as Lav just mentioned, the previous 2 years. In 12 rounds, in fact, played at the Hero, Scheffler has never shot an over par 18-hole score, which tells us that he likes the place very, very much. And since winning the Hero last year, gone on to produce one of the most memorable seasons in the game, claimed 7 PGA Tour titles in 24, and the Olympic gold medal, notched 41 consecutive rounds of par or better to start the 2024 season, recorded a tour best 16 top 10s in 19 starts, did not miss a cut, is a nominee for Jack Nicklaus Award as PGA Tour Player of the Year. I think he's going to get it. Seeking to become the first player to win PGA Tour Player of the Year honors in 3 straight years since Tiger Woods, y'all, 05 to 07.
And look, you have to have a ballot. Technically, Scottie Scheffler most likely going to win this. Xander Schauffele and his 2 major championship victories also on the board. Rory McIlroy, a pair of victories as well. But for more on Scottie Scheffler, we will head down to the Bahamas right now and join Rex Hoggard for an opportunity to catch up with the world number one. Rex, what's new with Scottie?
Thanks, Lav. If you look at Scottie's season, it certainly has been something to behold. But this is his first event in 3 months. As you pointed out, Lav, it seems like it's been a minute. And he told me when I talked to him this afternoon that he did spend some time at home reflecting on what was a historic season. But as you would expect from the world number one, he didn't spend much time counting the flowers. Instead, he immediately turned his attention to what's next.
I wouldn't say I reflected too much, but you know, I'm definitely proud of the work that we did this year, and it was nice to get some wins. But overall, you know, the offseason was mostly focused on just getting rested. It had been a pretty busy year, you know, all things considered, personally and professionally. But it was a fun year, but it was nice to go home and get some rest.
Leads you to my next question. Over the last few weeks, has it been Scottie the golfer or Scottie the family man that's taken up more time?
Well, I try to find a nice combination of both. You know, I try to be as efficient as I can when I practice. And when I'm at home, I'm trying not to think about golf. I'm trying to be present. But it's been fun. It's been nice to slow down a little bit and get some time at home.
I know you and Randy sit down at the end of every year and decide maybe some things you want to work on in the offseason. Is there anything specific that you want to work on looking ahead to next year?
I just think continuing to improve, you know, continuing to work on my distance control. I think you can always be kind of grinding to try and learn how to control your ball, hit different types of shots, and you know, improve areas around the green, continue to work on the stuff I've been working on with Phil and my putting. And most of the stuff we did this offseason was just what we've been working on the last couple of years.
And going back to last year, winning here, were you able to take that momentum into what turned into a historic season for you?
Yeah, I think so. You know, this was a tournament where It's kind of a really nice warm up for the season for me. It's kind of nice to get down here and kind of see where things are at and see what I need to work on for the next few weeks before the season starts next year. But, you know, I would say for this tournament, I'm not typically as fresh practice-wise as I normally am for a tournament for the regular season, but it's fun to come down here and compete in the Bahamas. You know, it's fun to come down here and play in Tiger's event, but this is always kind of a good gauge for me to see where I'm at. And so looking at last year's tournament, the thing I was focused on mostly was the putting. We tried some different things here with Phil last year that seemed to go well, and that was some stuff that we took into next season for sure.
Now, there is a distinction that Scotty wanted to make. If you look at that ballot that you were just talking about for the Player of the Year, that was sent out last week. And on that ballot, they have Scotty winning 7 times on the PGA Tour. But he is really quick to correct anyone who says that. And he says, I got 8 victories this year. Immediately goes to the Olympics. That's not an official PGA Tour victory. But when I asked him about it, he said that Sunday in Paris, that final 9 holes when he shot 29 to win that gold medal, that was the best golf he played all year long. Damon?
Wow, Scotty. Feisty Rex Hoggard with the world number one. And Ryan, you've dug into the numbers. What made 2024 so historically special for Scottie Scheffler?
Look, Scottie tends to downplay his achievements. You just heard in the interview there with Rex. And if you ask him, you know, why was the sort of breakout this year in 2024, yeah, winning 7 or 8 times in Scottie's estimation? And he'll sort of attribute it to making more putts, or maybe some of his final round charges were enough to win and guys couldn't catch him. But I think there was actually something more strategic that Scottie Scheffler did in 2024. Let's take a look at his driving distance and his driving accuracy numbers since 2022. And look, this graphic tells me that Scottie has made a conscious choice to prioritize scaling back off the tee in favor of putting the ball in the fairway more often than utilizing his best weapon, which is his iron play. When you dig even deeper, he's improved his distance from the edge of the fairway. In other words, his misses are not as wild. When you look at his proximity to the hole, it has gotten better each of the last 3 years, so he's giving himself better birdie looks. And you look at 23rd in driving accuracy, Damon, he's essentially Brian Harman, Matt Kuchar, Zach Johnson, with way more pop and plenty more in reserve. For context, Roy McIlroy or Xander Schauffele are about the top 100 on the PGA Tour in driving accuracy. It does add up to Scottie Scheffler's best year yet. And it's very interesting because speed training has been all the rage on the PGA Tour over the past couple years. We saw Xander Schauffele use it this year to great effect. We've seen Justin Thomas sort of chasing speed over these past couple months in his training. It's going to be interesting to see. This is such a copycat league or a copycat tour.
Yeah.
Are other players going to see what Scottie did, utilizing his best weapon as an iron play, and sort of copy that approach as well and put a premium once again on putting the ball in the fairway?
Love that analysis of his strategy. I want to talk about Scottie the man, and Rex kind of gave us a little hint in terms of that 7 wins versus 8 wins. I was out there quite a bit following Scottie this year. I was there at Bay Hill all the way to the President's Cup. And what I have come to recognize is, like, off the golf course, Scottie's like Joe Smith, next door neighbor, get your mail for you, talk a little football, talk about the eclipse, talk a little hoops. But inside the ropes, Lav, he is Hannibal Lecter. He wants your kidneys, he wants your liver, and he may or may not wash it down with a Chianti. He is meticulous, he is indefatigable, and he is hyper, hyper competitive. From January to December, he is wired to win, to improve. And I tell you what, there is nothing slowing him down in terms of his hunger. He is feisty. You tell him he has 7 wins, he'll tell you he had 8, and he'll tell you why.
And the people around Scottie have always marveled at how he's been able to separate 2 distinct parts of his personality, right? Like, he is and he has always been a competitive assassin.
Yeah, he really
in
is.
In money games with members at Royal Oaks, money games with his friends on the PGA Tour, in pickleball, in basketball. Like, that is who he is. But 15 minutes later, he sort of wipes it all away, and he can be normal, he can be gregarious, he can be quiet, he can be unassuming. Like, there's no spillover between those 2 parts of his personality. It's very uncommon.
Yeah.
Right? You're sort of wired a certain way. But Scottie Scheffler has this incredible gift and ability to be cold-blooded inside the ropes and your friend next door the very next second.
Seeing him stand alongside Russell Henley on that opening day at the President's Cup and having to put a microphone in his face seconds after the match ends, there was heat coming off Scotty Scheffler. If you gave him a helmet and shoulder pads, he would have been ready to hit somebody. That's how feisty and competitive the world number one is.
Probably a little bit different attitude this week at the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas. Laid back 20-minute exhibition. But if you do want to watch Scotty, here is just a reminder of how you can do so at the Hero World Challenge, hosted by Tiger Woods. Coverage begins at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday on Golf Channel, and split coverage over the weekend on NBC.
We have more news on this Wednesday. The LPGA and USGA have updated their respective gender policies for female competition eligibility, effective starting with the 2025 season. Under the new policies, players assigned male at birth and who have gone through male puberty will not be eligible to compete in elite professional and amateur competitions. Molly Marcuse-Simon, the outgoing LPGA commissioner, with the following statement: our policy is reflective of an extensive science-based and inclusive approach. The policy represents our continued commitment to ensuring that all feel welcome within our organization while preserving the fairness and competitive equity of our elite competitions.
And here's a statement as well from USGA CEO Mike Wan, who said, quote, we remain committed to providing opportunities for everyone to compete for a national title or team, but have made changes to our eligibility criteria that reflects current scientific data and strives to maintain competitive integrity. Our updated policy reflects a thoughtful and thorough process during which the USGA consulted with leading medical professionals from around the world. Golf Today is back after this. And welcome back to Golf Today. And what a year it's been for Robert McIntyre. In June, he won the RBC Canadian Open for his first PGA Tour victory with his dad on the bag, always a dream. Won that tournament by one stroke over Ben Griffin after shooting 68 in the final round.
Tell you what, Lav, the dream didn't stop because he won for the second time at the Genesis Scottish Open when he made a 22-foot birdie putt on the final hole to finish at 18 under 262, Saith Theegala was up on the veranda, beat Adam Scott by a shot, and became the first Scot since Colin Montgomery in 99 to win his National Open. The win was official both on the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. And when you play great golf, well, you get to tee it up in the Hero World Challenge. He's one of eight newcomers to the field this year. And yesterday, we had the chance to catch up with the two-time PGA Tour winner. And Robert McIntyre joins us now from the Hero World Challenge, one of eight first-timers in the field in Albany. What's it like being there? Tiger Woods, the host, exclusive field. What was the process of finding out you were one of the chosen one?
Yeah, it was just, we got the heads up about a month ago that I was probably going to be in it if I world rank and kind of stayed where it was. And you know, I've never been to the Bahamas. I've never been here to Albany. And I thought, you know what, when you get an opportunity like this, being from where I'm from, the weather back home just now is not pretty. So I thought, why not go and get some sunshine and play some good golf?
Bob, all we hear from the top players is that they actually want an off season now. Except you've been playing all over the world. You've been playing all fall. What does downtime actually look like for you this holiday season?
Yeah, I had 4 weeks off there before playing the Middle East, the end of season DP World Tour events. But yeah, there's not really an off season for me. Look, when you were in the position I was in at the start of the year, without a full real playing rights on the PGA Tour, it was just play when you can. Obviously, when I got them wins, it kind of changed a little bit, but then you're chasing more. You're never satisfied, you're always chasing for something better, and yeah, that's kind of what I've done. And obviously I had a back injury in Colorado, which kind of hampered things a little bit come the end of the PGA Tour season, but no, the body's feeling good now, and yeah, I just feel like playing as much golf as I can.
Well, you earned your spot in this field with two of the most emotional wins of the year in Canada and then your native Scotland as well. How do you turn the page and move past that and look ahead to 2025 when those two wins were so impactful and meaningful?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I move past them. I think I move alongside them. I don't, look, I might never get two better wins than that in my life. I mean, I'm sure there's many, many golfers present and past that would love to have had their dad caddy for them when they won the PGA Tour or won anywhere in the world. I was lucky enough to get that, and that happened to me in Canada. And then obviously Scotland, I said it from the start, from the first time I played it, it's the one I wanted. A lot of people laughed at me saying you would rather that over like a player's, but being Scottish and it being my home open, it's always been the one. And then to get that, yeah, it's just, there's only really one way to top them two, and that's a major championship. So look, it's going to be, wins are going to be kind of always equal to them. Obviously they're going to be special parts, but now it's trying to push forward and trying to, yeah, get the main crowns in our sport.
Bob, as reporters, we're always looking for the why. Why this year? Why did you take the leap? How do you explain it for yourself as to why 2024 was such a successful season for you?
I think a lot of things. I changed a bit in my team. Brought in people. People moved on. But then, to be honest with you, I just started trusting myself, trusting the people around me, trusting my caddy Mike. I managed to get him on board after some persuading. He'd done most of the year. He was obviously working with Danny Willett, and Danny was out injured, so Mike came on my bag, and I knew he was going back to Danny when Danny was back fit, and then I was trying to persuade him as much as I could to come on board, and obviously everything happened, and Mike was on the bag for the win in Scotland, thankfully. And We got him on board. He spoke to Danny, and Danny kind of was on side with that. But Mike's been a massive part in what I'm doing and how I trust myself on the golf course. And to be honest, it's as much as it's me trusting him, it's him trusting me. And we've got full trust in each other, and that's the only way we can work.
You mentioned being from Scotland. I'm curious how tight-knit the sporting community is there. Are there things you've learned from an Andy Murray in tennis or a great footballer? Who are some of the inspirations that have maybe helped you along the way?
Yeah, no, to be honest, I've not really had much input from elsewhere. But that being said, I've got a lot of connections within the sport world now. Since kind of my rise, I've managed to kind of connect with a lot of footballers, rugby players, obviously Andy Murray. And I just feel like if I ever need help or need advice, I've got that kind of at the end of the phone. I've got the contacts now that I can do that, and I feel comfortable enough with them that I can approach them and ask them some personal questions, and that can help me in the future. But just now, it's been just the rise and fall of my choices, to be honest.
There's been a lot of conversation on the PGA Tour over the past couple of months about membership and eligibility and certain pathways. In hindsight, how important was that opportunity to graduate from the DP World Tour to the PGA Tour and advance the trajectory of your career?
Oh, it's been unbelievable. Obviously, I came out here a few years ago and got temporary membership, and didn't quite happen for me at the Wyndham. But to be honest, it's been, if it wasn't full-size fields, I wouldn't be in this position right now. So, there's obviously negatives and positives to why they're doing it. But it's all about playing opportunities, and obviously there's a limit to how many guys you can get on a golf course. I felt the brunt of that early on last year, where probably 4 out of 5 events I didn't finish. But I get guys that are just wanting a chance, really aren't bothered if they're going to play 4 holes in the morning or not. It's kind of, it's what they want to do. It's, they just want a chance. And I mean, I got my chance, and thankfully I took it.
You know what it's like to win on the DP World Tour, to win on the PGA Tour, to win a Ryder Cup as a member of Team Europe. What's it like for you listening to the conversation about whether American Ryder Cup members should be paid or not paid, when it sounds like the clarion call for Team Europe is we pay to be on the Ryder Cup? What's it like for you to hear that talk from the American side?
Yeah, it's obviously different. It's different. Obviously play for a different reason. I grew up watching Ryder Cups and watching, I mean, Seve at the end, and just watching all the guys that have come before me playing for each other, playing for the badge. I mean, we had some special things going on in that team, in the team room, in the locker room. Things that were above money, to be honest with you. It was all pride and, yeah, I mean, everyone's been open, and you'll see it coming out soon, that we had a Seve's last worn shirt in our locker, in our locker room. And you could go in there and you see it, and it just gave you goosebumps. And we obviously had Jose Maria in the team, and I mean, we got told what the Ryder Cup was about, and for Team Europe, it's far more than money.
We always hear about a Ryder Cup bump or a President's Cup bump, a player who performs well and then carries that on the following year. In hindsight, Robert, how much do you think that experience in Rome contributed to your breakthrough in 2024?
It was massive. A lot of it is down to that. Just, to be honest, not even just the golf side of it, but the equipment side of it, the way the golf balls were landing on greens. I mean, I've changed equipment since Rome, because I learned a lot from hitting certain shots into greens and watching my ball react. And obviously then the other side of it was I was competing against the very best in the world. And okay, I didn't play great on the Friday, but I felt like from Friday onwards I stood my ground and, yeah, played my part. And that's kind of made me realise that I'm just every bit as good.
Well, it was a massive 2024 for you. The Bahamas seemed to fit you. The shirt looks great. Be sure to lather on the SPF of 50 and enjoy your week at the Hero World Challenge.
Thank you.
And when Golf Today returns, we look back at one of the premier events in 2024, the AIG Women's Open, and what a masterclass performance from Lydia Ko at St. Andrews.
To be a champion alongside Lorena and Stacey, it's definitely, you know, cool names to be around. And Stacey and Stacey's parents, they've always kind of given me a lot of good advice and been, you know, super supportive for me. And to be able to win at a historic place like that where she has won, I think meant a lot for me in that way as well. So, yeah, it's a historic place to win, but just personally it was just special because it was also at a place where Stacey had won too.
And AIG continues to be one of the big supporters of the women's game. You see the purse from 2024, $9.5 million. Future venues, Royal Porthcawl in 2025. 2026, Royal Lytham and St. Anne's will host the AIG Women's Open. With more on this prestigious championship, we send it over to Cara Banks.
Well, I'm delighted to be joined by Peter Zaffino, the Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of AIG. We're going to learn a little bit more about their partnership, because back in 2019 is when it all began with the Women's Open. You became the title sponsor. I'm interested to find out why you were motivated to make such a significant multi-year commitment to the Women's Open.
Thank you for having me here today. We were looking at ways in which we could get involved in women's golf well before 2019. When the title sponsor opportunity came up for the Women's British Open, it was a great opportunity for us to partner with the RNA. We had shared values and really had a vision for how we could impact, you know, the women's game by thinking about venues, experience for the players, and then trying to address the pay equity gap. And that was the journey that we wanted to start on. And, you know, we began in 2019. It's been a tremendous, you know, set of years. Obviously, dealing with COVID was complicated, but You know, overall, it's been a tremendous partnership and a great sponsorship.
Well, each year the championship has raised the bar, no doubt. I'm fascinated to learn how you measure your success at AIG. And when you look back at this year's, the 2024 AIG Women's Open, what were some of your highlights?
Well, 2024 was a fantastic year because it was at St. Andrews, which has so much history. We never wanted to look past any of the other venues because they were tremendous. Carnoustie, Troon, Muirfield were great experiences for the women. But the amount of time we've had to move the game forward with partnership with the RNA, addressing the pay equity gap, and the purse is almost three times what it was when we started. And the venues were so important for the players. And the women professionals, over 50% of the women that competed in the AIG Women's Open 2024 had never played a competitive round at St. Andrews. So that was an amazing experience for everyone. And, really feel like we hit a lot of milestones with the RNA in 2024.
Yeah, just such an iconic place in the world of golf. To be able to have the AIG Women's Open there was such a special week. And as a result, you've been recognized by the LPGA. The AIG Women's Open has now received the Gold Driver Award for the best player experience. That says a lot for the LPGA. When you reflect on what that means and the recognition that you've received, how do you think that will ultimately impact women's golf as a whole?
It was a tremendous award to be recognized for, because we always focus on, player experience and can they have the same experience going to a major championship as the men do. You need a partner. You need the RNA to be, focused and leading with that journey. But we were really pleased to be recognized, because we want to raise the bar for all professional tournaments in women's golf, and particularly focus on the majors. And if it becomes a standard, then it becomes something that is done in many places. And so we could not be more proud.
I know we just spoke about St. Andrews a moment ago, and obviously that just being such a highlight this year, it is just a real pinnacle. But when you think specifically about that week and about everything that comes with playing at the home of golf, what made it that much more special, do you think?
The history and the number of people that know about St. Andrews, but, learn so much more when they actually come, to the venue, thinking about the hundreds of years that people have played golf there, public course, really the home of golf, and, just little history of, that it was designed to go the opposite way in terms of play. And so I think just everybody became very immersed in the overall experience, having the RNA clubhouse, on the first hole, and a lot more involvement. Everybody was present. And again, just the, excitement of being able to play there for, the women professionals was terrific.
There's such a buzz in that town whenever there's a big championship, and for that to be for the best women players in the world, it makes it almost even more special. Obviously, you have the partnership with the RNA, and Martin Slumbers has been absolutely key to that. What does he do, or has he done, do you think, for the sport and for the AIG Women's Open in particular?
He's been tremendous. His leadership in a period where golf has had a lot of challenges, he was always leading from the front. His vision of what he wanted to do in women's professional golf was a significant ambition, but he realized a lot of it. So I think his focus on all the things that we talked about with our values, the pay, equity gaps and player experience venues, without his leadership and other leaders at the RNA, this would not have happened. And so I think he really wanted his legacy to be, what impact could he have on the women's game of golf? But more importantly, is it going to sustain long-term? And that's why we made a long-term commitment to him, was you can't have an impact on short-term sponsorships if you want to have it, tied to values and actually having impact, which is why we've decided to do long-term extensions so we can have a strategic intent of what we can do over multiple years.
The women's game needs supporters like Martin Slumbers and supporters like you. It's honestly a delight to meet you, and thank you
Likewise.
For all the work you're doing. We love the AIG Women's Open, and off to Royal Porthcawl next year, so looking forward to that. But Peter, thanks for taking the time with
us today.
Thank
you very much, Karen. Thank you.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
This week, the Hero World Challenge returns to Albany, Bahamas for the ninth consecutive year. 15-time major champion Tiger Woods plays tournament host. And in case you missed it, here's some of what Tiger said on Tuesday regarding his health and his outlook.
I'm not tournament sharp yet. No, I'm still not there. And these are 20 of the best players in the world, and I'm not sharp enough to compete against them at this level. So when I'm ready to compete and play at this level, then I will. The fire still burns to compete. The difference is the recovery of the body to do it is not what it used to be. I still love doing it. I love competing. I love competing at anything, whether it's we're playing cards or we're playing golf. And no matter what it is, I love competing. That's never going to leave. But as far as the recovery process of going out there and doing it again and again and again and doing it consistently at a high level, I can't. For some reason, the body just won't recover like it used to. And that's part of age and part of the athlete's journey.
With more on Tiger and the week in the Bahamas, we welcome in our great colleague and friend, John Wood from Albany. Listen, based on what you know about Tiger Woods as we sit on December 4th, but also based on what you know about him historically, any reason for optimism when you look at Tiger the player in 2025?
The only reason for optimism is it's Tiger Woods. And every time I've doubted him or anybody's doubted him, he's come back one more time. So as long as he's able to put a peg in the ground, I think there's a possibility of great golf. It's just you've seen it so often over the years. Obviously, like he said, it's going to become much harder now with all the injuries he's had and the body trying to recoup in a way where he can play like he wants and practice like he wants. But, you know, when you watch him hit balls, the sound is still the same. The sound is still the best sound in the world. So if it was just swinging, he could do it. It's just everything else that goes with it. So, you know, I think we all hope for it. It's just a question at this point whether he's going to come back all the way.
Woody, what's it been like for you to see Tiger from the biggest star on the golf course to arguably the biggest voice on the PGA Tour? What's that evolution been like for you?
It's been incredible to see his whole career from the very beginning. I think we actually started the same year, so I always argue with him who really made the golf boost, me or him. But obviously, but it's been so fun watching him develop as a person. Obviously, when he came out, he had every skill in the book golf-wise, and added to that over the years. But as his playing has slowed down, he has become such a different person out here in terms of friendships in those team rooms. Tiger used to be very quiet and to himself. Now, when he's in those team rooms as an assistant or whatever, he is so involved. He's so helpful, giving so much information to guys who have worshipped him growing up and patterned their lives after him. It's just been great. And he seems to me, obviously, he wants to come back and play great golf. But he seems to me like a happier human being than he's ever been with his kids, with his life, where he's at in life. And that's been great to see, you know, as a friend. So I'd love to see him have one more little run here. I think we all would. But I think Tiger's in a really good place in his life. And it's been fun to watch the development.
Well, speaking of great runs, I mean, you watched Tiger Woods back up historically great seasons, stack them on each other. What's the biggest challenge facing the current world number one, Scottie Scheffler, as he tries to stack an historic season following his 2024?
You know, that's a great question. His consistency has been absolutely absurd. Every week he's right there, and sometimes that can take a lot out of you. If you finished, you know, 12th one week and 30th one week and maybe win one down and then go back, that takes some pressure off you. But when you're there every single week, the pressure builds and it's exhausting. So I would say he manages his time so well. He practices well. He doesn't come out here and just spend all day long. He gets what he needs to get done, and he gets out of here. So I think that watching that in terms of his exhaustion level and how quick can he be ready for the next day, and I think he's got a real good handle on that. I spoke to his nutritionist a couple weeks ago, and they've got a real good handle on that as well. So I think he's doing all the right things. And the ball striking just seems to be always there. And that's the one thing that travels. If you're a hot putter and an okay ball striker, you're going to have weeks here and there. But the fact that he hits it so good and doesn't seem to, you know, that doesn't seem to vary week to week. He hits it great every single week. So if he keeps doing that, I don't see why he can't have a similar year this year and moving forward. He's just that good a ball striker.
Woody, these comparisons used to be sacrilegious, but in what ways Do you think Scottie Scheffler is similar? In what ways do you think Scottie Scheffler is different from Tiger Woods inside the ropes?
I'll start with different. I think, you know, when Tiger was in his prime, you know, for that 10-year period, he was, everybody feared him. He was a scary person. You see him on the leaderboard or even starting a tournament, you'd look him, watch him hit balls and chip and putt, and you go, I just can't beat that guy. And then as soon as he got a lead, those tournaments were over. I think Scottie Scheffler thinks that way, but I think the rest of the field, he's such a nice guy and so congenial that everybody thinks, oh, Scottie's playing well again, great. And they don't have that same defeatist attitude as maybe when Tiger was winning everything. In terms of similarities on the course, I'll go back to ball striking. I mean, and no weaknesses, really. You think about the whole, their complete games. When Tiger was at his peak, great driver of the ball, the best iron player in the world, phenomenal short game, and a great putter. You look at Scottie Scheffler, drives it great, best iron player in the world. I don't think he's ever not been pin high in the last 3 years. His short game's ridiculous, so if he somehow does get in trouble on a hole, he can get it up and down from everywhere. And, you know, everybody talks about putting maybe not being the strongest link in his game, but when you watch every single putt and he's got 14 birdie putts every day from inside 15 feet, it might feel like he's not a great putter, but I think that's more perception. So I think the fact that neither of them have any sort of deficiencies in their game, and they don't have highs and lows. They are level. They pay as much attention to that first wedge they hit on Tuesday as the last putt they hit on Sunday. So nothing's too big for them. I think that's a big similarity between those two.
Woody, you are the United States Ryder Cup team manager. Over the last month, we've been hearing different voices about whether the American team should be paid in charity dollars or direct deposit into a money market account. How critical is it for the Americans to be of one voice and move past this? Because, Woody, the Europeans are laughing and loving this.
You know, I don't think it's any controversy at all amongst the American team at all. I don't think it means anything to anybody. I think once those pegs go in the ground, it all goes away. I don't think it's a bad thing that probably the biggest money-making event in the world of golf, that's the actual reason it is. Those guys get a little cash for it. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. Obviously, they make a lot of money, but to give them more money to donate to charity, to pay off their caddy more, whatever they choose to do with it, I don't think it's a ridiculous thing at all, and I don't think it'll be any issue whatsoever to the American team.
Well, you're not concerned at all that this could be a potential rallying cry for the Europeans? We had Robert McIntyre on the show earlier saying that they're playing for more than just money. It seems like we're pitting two different sides, greedy Americans versus the Europeans who are playing for pride in themselves. Do you see it, any sort of optically at least, being a potential issue?
I mean, maybe to the general public and to us in the media, but I don't think the Americans won't be thinking about money when that Ryder Cup comes up one bit, not at all. I guarantee you that. So, you know, we'll see what happens moving forward with the European team. I just think this was something that was probably time for. I will say this. I think most of it was from the PGA of America. I think this is, they've spearheaded this. I don't think they were forced into this decision or badgered into it at all. I think this was their decision, thinking, you know, this is a lucrative event for us. We do great. And the reason we do great is the players. People want to watch the players. So why don't we share a little bit of this largesse with them? So I don't think it's got anything to do with the players. And I think the players will be thrilled with it. But I don't think it's going to change, you know, how competitive they are that week at all. They're going to be just as competitive as always and wanting to win.
We started talking Tiger. We'll finish talking Tiger. You said you'll join the PGA Tour alongside Tiger next year. Golf Channel celebrating 25 years since Tiger's historic 2000. What do you remember about 2000? What memories in that 9-win, 3-major season come flooding back to you, Woody?
I remember, there's nothing I don't remember. Everything he did that year was perfect. Every time he teed, he was that guy who, when he came on the range to warm up, everybody stopped. Everybody just, I mean, the players, the caddies, the fans, everything just got quiet and everybody just watched him. He's that kind of a persona and that kind of a, you know, you felt like he couldn't lose. You felt like everybody was playing for second every single week. And I loved that era of Tiger because Tiger was so tough mentally. You talk about everything physically, but he wanted to drill you. He wanted to beat 155 guys badly every week. And I think that was it was fun to watch and fun because nobody in golf really did that until him. And I just love that aspect that he kind of changed golf from being kind of a slower sport, a quieter sport, into an electric atmosphere whenever he was there. And it changed the athleticism of golfers. You look at everybody today, they're all in great shape. Back then, you had maybe three or four guys who worked out. Then Tiger did it. Now everybody does it. So I remember him just changing the entire landscape of golf in that way and seeing what was possible. Before, it was kind of like, man, a two-win year is unbelievable. What a great year. And then he started doing that, and everybody kind of raised the bar and said, wow, there's more to this.
He was the maestro. He was the man. Woody, you're the man. Thanks for joining us from Albany. Have a great week.